Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Gordon Miller in studio. Our buddy Eddie Olchuk will join us of the NHL on TNT.
My old partner at NBC.
That's right.
Yeah.
And
a great guy to work with.
Eddie's a man of the people.
And likes his things. Eddie likes his things.
He loves the ponies is what he loves.
He does love the ponies, but he likes like he's... He's got his water just the way he likes it, and it's good.
Nothing wrong with the routine, Gord.
He loves Fiji water.
Is that right? So he's committed to a certain brand of water.
100%. He won't like me saying that probably, but yeah.
I have no brand loyalty when it comes to water. If it's available and it's wet.
You know what's amazing?
I'm in.
A liter of bottled water costs more than a liter of gasoline. How does that make sense?
I'm not sure.
How in our world does it make sense that a liter of water, which you can get free from a tap? So I've got this beaten up TSN, what are these called, swell bottles?
Mm-hmm.
From like 4 years ago or whatever. I put some tap water in. Didn't cost me anything. But if I go to the store, that's $2.50. If I fill up with gas at that place, it's like $1.39 a liter. How does that make sense?
I'm not sure. That's capitalism for you, man.
Run the world, things are going to be different, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And I'm not going to space. I mean, we talked about it in the last episode.
You made it clear you're not going to space.
You're a space guy. You're very lucky. You have been all over the world. Your job has taken you all over the world, mostly Canada, the States, and Europe with the World Juniors and with the World Championships. Yeah. But I'm sure you've traveled other parts.
I've been
parts.
To Australia for the Olympics and places like that, yeah.
There you go. So maybe there aren't a lot of spots you're still looking to get to.
Well, lots of them, yeah.
Okay, but that's my thing, space. I got enough down here at Earth. I got some places I want to get to, before I go to space. What's space going to do for me? I'm going up there for the day and coming back.
The thing is, Brian, if you go to space, you see all the other stuff.
But you don't see all the other stuff.
Well, you do from a distance.
Yeah, you're up there. You don't know what the hell's going on up there.
I remember sitting in an airport lounge with Chris Hadfield, who said the biggest thing that stood out for him was when you look down, there's no borders.
When you look at a map,
you always see borders, right?
So is he like a hippie up there or what?
Well, he played guitar up there. I would just like to go. I think it'd be cool to go. I'm a space guy. I'm kind of into it.
You're into the space
I'm
stuff.
The whole space stuff. But I'm not
so
into
So do you like look at stars? And do you have a star named
after
you? Oh,
no, that's Bob my daughter does. But Bob McKenzie's the astronomer. That would surprise you to know that, wouldn't it?
I had no idea Bob McKenzie's was into that.
Bob McKenzie's a big league astronomer. No, I'm more into the history of space exploration, space flight, the Mercury astronauts, the Apollo program, that kind of stuff. I've been to Cape Canaveral and or Cape Kennedy and looked at that and I've been to the Houston Space Center, I'm into that.
Okay. Yeah, listen, I'm not downplaying that.
But you know what? Billionaires in space does not.
That's not your thing.
No, I mean, that's just.
You'd prefer they auction that off. Although I think they have been bringing up,
They have. And they brought a lady today into space who was denied the chance in the 60s. I think that's great. But I just think in these times, let's put private money to better use than this. Because really, not to get too much into it, but when they went to the moon, they had two choices. They could orbit the Earth and then send a thing onto the moon from there, which would have created a technology that would have lived, or they could orbit the moon, which is faster and cheaper. So they created technology to go to the moon, which is kind of useless. So why don't we take that money that you spent on technology that's not really going to advance anything, except, I guess, commercial space travel, which you could theoretically do what we have anyway. Why don't we spend that on things like eradicating disease or, building roads in the third world?
So obviously that would be great. I don't think that's Jeff Bezos's priority, though, and I don't think he's under any obligation to do that.
No, it's just too bad. I mean, we're getting really far afield here. But
yeah, we're getting pretty deep into it. But he's a private citizen that's made money. He can do whatever he wants with it.
If you compare Bill Gates to Steve Jobs, now Gates obviously has had his issues, but Gates' philanthropy is extraordinary. He has literally contributed billions of dollars to causes and has helped change the world for the better.
So you're a Bill Gates guy.
I'm an Apple guy. I use Apple products. But
is that right?
Steve Jobs... There's no measurable philanthropy at all over the course of his life. There was no indication.
Is that something that you have to do if you've made money and you've been a success? You have to give back.
No, but I think one of the primary goals in life is to try to make the world a better place for your being in it. And certainly, Brian, you have done
that. That's very idealistic.
Brian, you have done that. You have made the world a better place
for having
hosted this show. You have made
a
major contribution.
I believe I've checked that mark off. Yes, I agree.
You've ticked that box. You're free to do whatever you want with your money.
It sounds very good, Gord, and in a perfect world, I would agree with you. I think holding people to that standard is unfair in a lot of ways.
I'm not holding to a standard. I just think it's...
But you are. You're saying, Steve Jobs wasn't good enough.
No,
he didn't do enough for you.
I didn't say that. I just said there's a contrast between the two men. And when you look at their legacy, part of your legacy is what you give back. Right? So that's part of your legacy.
Or what you've supplied the world with. And I would say Apple and the iPhone and all that is maybe it hasn't made us a better society. Maybe it has not actually contributed to the world
as much as
we would
Apple's
hope.
Moved things a lot. But
right. Steve Jobs deserves credit for that, I think.
Edzo must wonder what he's got himself into here.
Well, yeah. He probably doesn't want to go down that path
because
there's a lot of different things to get into, and we've had him on the show many times. This is the first time since he's been at TNT, and I believe the official title is the NHL and Turner Sports Analyst. I like it. Here he is, Eddie Olchuk, longtime NHLer, former Leaf, one of our favorites, author of Beating the Odds in Hockey and in Life, Eddie Olchuk. What's happening, Eddie?
Hey, what's up, Brad Gordo? Hope you guys are doing well. Thanks for having me.
We're doing very well. Gord was telling secrets about you in the booth.
Okay, I shouldn't have done that.
And how you operate. And you're very particular, apparently, with the way you set up before a game.
Well, Ed, so you like your Fiji water, right? Is that's not a state secret, but...
Oh, that's what I prefer, but, I mean, sometimes it's not handy, and it depends on the budget, Gord. I mean, that's certainly... is a part of it, but I prefer the smooth feel of Fiji going down the pipes. But yeah, that's about all. And then whatever it is, as long as the cough button works, I'm okay. So I'm okay.
I love it. I love that your brand loyalty to a specific type of water. I love that. I wish I was as committed. I got to find some sort of a brand that I can attach myself to and go with. But what do you make of where we're at with Seattle in this whole week? I mean, I've enjoyed it. I'm curious to see how it's going to play out over the next 48 or 72 hours. Where's your captivation level at, Eddie?
Well, it's a couple, and I guess it should be full disclosure here, wearing a couple of different hats. Family, I got some skin and blood in the game.
Yeah.
My brother Ricky is vice president and assistant general manager to the legendary Ron Francis there in Seattle, so he's been there pretty much from day one. Ricky was Ronnie's first hire after he became general manager, and then in the last, I want to say 4 months, or more than that, I'm sorry, probably 6 months. My oldest son, Eddie, is an amateur scout in the central part of the U.S. for the amateur side for the Kraken. And so it's a pretty exciting week when you look at it with the expansion draft tomorrow and then the amateur draft on Friday and Saturday. So putting that aside with skin in the game, I think it's very exciting. I think now... even more so, Bri, because of what we saw a couple of years ago with Vegas, right? Like, I think the anticipation of the team that they're able to put together, can they make a run like Vegas did? I wouldn't be surprised to see, maybe the Kraken and Golden Knights kick off and play opening night, maybe somewhere, to kick off the season. So, that would certainly be exciting and add a little bit of drama, so to speak, to opening night. But, I think when you look at some of the players on the board, I think everybody in the hockey world is certainly, looking at that and seeing what they might do and what conversations they've had with other teams about, asking, hey, will you pick up this guy or that guy and, we'll flip you this or, what do you need? I mean, there's just so many things behind the scenes and, but I think it's very exciting and just looking forward to seeing, what they end up deciding to do. And then, of course, with the draft this weekend is always exciting.
Edzo, one thing, Vegas made 10 deals in 2017. The bulk of them were, we remember the Alex Tuck deal from Minnesota. We'll give you Alex Tuck. You take Eric Haula. That protects Matt Dumba. There may be less of that. A lot of people think that teams kind of learn from that experience. But don't you think, Edzo, I really think... in 2021, so many teams are up against the cap. Where Seattle can really feast is, you know, Vegas took four contracts back in 2017. Seattle could have an appetite much bigger than that and get a real haul for taking on contracts from teams that don't want to get rid of contracts but have to.
Yeah. Well, it is a much different dynamic, Gordo. It is, just because of the world that we're living in, and, you know, coming off the pandemic and, you know, the flat salary cap and everything going on, and seeing the players that are on the, you know, on the, you know, that are available for Seattle to be able to take and, you know, whether they hold on to them or they end up flipping them or whatever it ends up happening. It is a dynamic that is interesting. And, you know, I think everybody is really excited to see kind of how they play it. And you're right. I mean, when you look at some of the players that George McPhee was able to navigate and grab and bring, you know, into under the Vegas Golden Knight umbrella, and think about, you know, where, you know, maybe the first time go around, I think what you're getting at, Gordo, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like, okay, some teams were more worried about, you know, a couple of players or whatever, right. But, you know, instead of just worrying and saying, hey, look, we're going to lose one player, big, you know, big blanket deal. Like, that's just the end of it, right? Like, you just, that's what it is. And all of a sudden, you know, you had George that got some general managers on the hook and played them and yelled fish on, and all of a sudden they got two players and maybe a draft pick for not taking somebody that maybe they had no interest in taking. And you see how successful they've been. So there's some pressure on Seattle. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, I've talked to that about my brother and to Ronnie Francis about that. And just look, you know, I mean, let's try to, you know, just, you know, temper expectations here and realize what Vegas did, you know, may never happen again right. In professional sports when you think about it. But I think you're right. I think teams and general managers, certainly I would hope that they've learned since then, but you know, there might be some interesting things that happen here in the next, 30 hours or so. And people will be wondering, well, how in the hell did that happen? Well, sometimes the other guy in the other room thinks he's a little bit smarter than everybody else. And all of a sudden you get caught with your hand in a cookie jar.
Right. Is this the end of the road for you for expansion, Eddie? I mean, when you were in the league, it was 21 teams. Now we're up to 32. Can we get to 34 in the next decade or what?
Hey, Brian, thank you for being a friend there. I thought you were going to sit there and just go ahead and take a shot. Now, were you there in a six-team league? Or
he was the original 21, right?
Right.
And yeah, so played the original 21.
Yeah, no. Hey, what the hell? Why not? I hope so. I hope I'm still around, and I hope I'm still a part of the greatest league in the world, and, you know, we can get a couple of other teams in there, and, you know, look at that means that the, you know, the growth of the game is good, Bri. It's healthy. But again, I mean, look at the world that we're still in. Let's make it perfectly clear. It's going to take a while. So, I mean, if it's, you know, 3 to 5 years or whatever, you know, great. Do I think there's an opportunity that we will have a couple more teams in the NHL before, what are we in right now? We're still in 2021,
yes.
Right?
I think so.
You know, by 2030, do I think that we might have, you know, 34 teams? Yeah, I think we could. I do. I think there's some possibilities out there and some markets, and, you know, maybe you get another team in a couple of big cities that we have throughout the U.S. and Canada, and go from there. But I think that the league is in a great spot. Hopefully, you know, teams will be able to have a little bit more maneuverability here moving forward, you know, once we get, you know, through this pandemic and get right on the right side of it and get business back going and everybody can be healthy. But I don't think we're done, Brian. I really don't. I think that there's going to be an opportunity to add a couple of more teams. And if that indeed is the case, that means life is good in the NHL, and that's a good thing. That's a great thing.
Edzo, let me ask you this. So next year, half the teams in the league will miss the playoffs. So 16 to 32 make it, 16 to 32 miss. Mm-hmm. What would you think about some form of, you know, and Ken Holland in Edmonton has talked about this, some kind of play-in for, say, having, if you wanted 10 teams in each conference make the playoffs and have a play-in for the bottom four, what would you feel about that?
Mm-hmm. I guess similar to what happened with the NBA this year, right? I would imagine
right.
That's kind of
what
he's thinking about. Honestly, Gordon, Bri, my feelings are, Brian, I think we talked about this on a couple of times I've had the privilege of being on your show. My feeling is I'm old school, and I'm okay with that, and I'll show my stripes. I think it should be the top 16 teams in the league make the playoffs. That's what I think. And I think that if you win, in regulation, you get your 2 points. If you win in overtime, the team that loses should get nothing. That's just my opinion. And I would love to see that. I would love to go back to to the old days. You know, we were talking a little bit earlier. That's just my feeling. But look at I understand what Kenny is getting at, and I understand why the NBA, did that, and have that one game play in to get to the playoffs, and you reward your divisional winners or your conferences or however you want to play it. I would just, for a year or 3 years or whatever it is, I would love to see, how that would all, kind of play out. And you could have, again, the situation we were in this year, hopefully we never, have those restrictions again. But, we were on a course there where, it could have been Montreal and Boston in the Stanley Cup final, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, that would have been unbelievable in any situation, let alone trying to navigate through a pandemic. But I don't know if I would give a thumbs up on that. I certainly understand it, and more teams, the merrier. Look, if you want to open it up maybe a bit, you could probably sell it to me on that way, Gord, where maybe the top four teams get a bye, and then maybe you can have that little aspect of the the mini playoff to get into the main playoff, and then go from there. But I guess almost like the bubble, almost like the bubble aspect, which right. You had more teams in there. But again, then you argue, well, you had 12th place teams in the conference making the bubble, and all of a sudden a fourth seed or a fifth seed loses and they're out. So there's a lot there, but I'd go old school. I would go 1 versus 16 and figure it out from there.
Yeah, I love that idea. Get rid of the conferences.
Well, tougher track, but you know what though? For those of us who were around a long time ago, in 1980, I think Edmonton played Philadelphia in the first round. Like, if you're going to have a team from the West play a team from the East in the first round of the playoffs, I mean, the travel does get pretty arduous. If you play four rounds of playoffs, you're going coast to coast all the time.
That's their issue, not me. I'm sitting at home watching it, Gord. I'm just right. I'm looking for entertainment.
But Brian, got to remember, too, right? Guys, remember, like, so take Boston, for example. So say Boston's playing Anaheim in the first round of the playoffs. Well, those games are starting at 10:30 at night in Boston.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and that's an issue, and that's probably why it won't happen. And that's largely TV-driven.
Well, yes. Yeah, and money, yes. Too, right? It is money, too, yeah. Right? I mean, yeah. Besides the players going coast to coast and whatever. But, look at you want to have your divisional play, and then, you want to reseed, after the fact. You want to really kind of say, okay, well, these are the top teams. So a team from the Central, shouldn't be, getting being in a situation where they have advantages where they're six overall in the final, eight teams or whatever it is. I'm just kind of looking at it from the aspect of would I rather have it one way or the other, and I just think it would be flat out awesome to be able to have that opportunity. And I think at the end of the day, in my opinion, I think that you would see the so-called cream rise at the top if you did go 1 versus 16, and you might have your opportunity to get the top, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams, battling there and having a chance that you could have a 1 versus 5 Stanley Cup final, or you can maybe end up having a 1 versus 2, which I think over the course of the regular season and into the playoffs, I think everybody would love to see.
Yeah, I'd love that variety for sure. We're chatting with Eddie Olchuk, NHL on Turner Sports Analyst. We got to ask you about the Leafs before we get you out of here, Eddie. Needless to say, there's some nerves up here in Toronto about what could happen over the next 2 weeks. And, we're inside the bubble, inside the echo chamber. Mm-hmm. We talk about this team all the time. We're yelling, screaming about it. You're on the outside, but you got the connection, obviously, based on your history with the team, and you're as locked in with this league as anybody. So where's your headspace at with where the Leafs are at, considering what they've been through, and maybe how active you expect them to be, or how active they have to be over the next couple of weeks to address some of the holes that they still have in the lineup?
Yeah. I mean, they got to get a goalie, Bri. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where it lies. And again, I don't know what's going on with Freddie Anderson or if Jack Campbell's going to be the guy or not. I mean, I don't, he can be a serviceable backup, but I just don't think, I think you need to go out and figure out who that guy is. Now, is John Gibson available? My understanding at the end of last year near the trade deadline is that he was very much available. I was told that there was a deal in place with Carolina. They had something very large on the table, but Carolina decided to back out, you know, in the, you know, 11th hour or whatever you want to call it. So, you know, is that a possibility, you know, of going out and getting, again, I don't know what you guys think of a guy like John Gibson, but when I look at him, like, I automatically think he's a top 10 goalie in the league for sure. Now, if you get him on a team that is not being, you know, barraged with shots all the time and doesn't have the puck a lot and is always defending, obviously the numbers and the analytics will say different things. But I think it starts right there, and then you go from there, right? Because if you can look at it, if you think you need to improve your depth, you know, on the back end, you know, do you think you might need a little bit more finish up front? You know, but it doesn't matter. If you're not going to get the guy in goal to be able to give you a chance, you're not going to win. And said this all the time, is that if you got it, you got a chance. If you got it, you got no shot to win in the NHL. And I know what the Leafs' expectations are. I mean, it's like the time is now. And if you don't get a goalie, again, look at it. If Freddie ends up coming back, again, I don't know. You guys are closer to me, but there are some guys out there, and if you're willing to dance with somebody, I think there might be an opportunity to go out there and really improve the position. And, again, money, I know money is snug. I get it. I understand that. But at some point here, you might have to cut bait with some money and make sure that you got the guy in goal that can give you a chance to win each and every night. Most important time is, you know, is playoff time.
And so before you go, yep. I gotta say something. I appreciate you declaring your conflict with Seattle because your brother's there and your son and everything else. And I should declare mine.
Yeah.
I should declare mine because you and I both work with Cammy Granato. And, of course, I work with Ray Ferraro. I was in Vancouver. I don't want to spread rumors. I don't want to, you know, but I do want to say they might be dating. there's something going on there. I'm not sure what it is, but my spidey sense is tingling on that.
Your TMZ Gord.
Do you get that sense, Eddie, that there's something going on between Cammy and Ray?
Well, I think that's probably for a late night show, and I'm not sure if I'm really. I'm up that late. But believe it or not, Brian, you're not going to believe this. You're going to appreciate this more than Gord or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just got a text and said, "Well, just let me paint the picture here." So, hold on, let me go back because I'm all confused right now. I don't know what the hell is going on with Ray. I'm not sure, and I'm not going to really ask. But I will say this, Bri, you'll appreciate this. 30 seconds ago, I just got a text. I'm like, what is this? So I took a quick look. I was a sneaky peeker. They said, do you want to go to the game tonight in Milwaukee? Because I'm only 60 miles from Milwaukee. So, and I'm like, you know what? My granddaughter is about 3 miles from here, and I haven't seen her in a while. So you know what? I gotta say no. So I'm gonna go visit my granddaughter instead of going to Game Six tonight. So
well,
that's where I am.
Grandfather of the year, but maybe get down to the Deer District after, get her to sleep, and then get down there. Apparently, 65,000 people are gonna be outside the building tonight in Milwaukee.
Yeah, it's gonna be a gong show. So all I know is I got my feet wet at 2-0 in the series. That the Bucks would win, and I'm sitting on a nice little ticket at plus 385, Bry. So you can explain that to Gord what that
I
means.
I love it. I will, and that you're gonna be well sweating
aware.
It tonight.
I'm well aware, my friend, of what that means.
You might be sweating it, but I like it tonight. I'd cash that.
No,
tonight.
No. I'm good. They want me to cash out early, and I'm like, not a chance.
No, you ride that wave.
I'm riding this thoroughbred all the way. So if the Bucks win, then yours truly will. We'll buy dinner next time I'm in TO. Hey, can I ask a serious question here?
Yeah.
Is LeBaron Steakhouse still around?
No.
It's not.
No, it's a parking lot now.
That makes it even worse. I'm sorry.
No, that was when they used to bring the steaks right to the table. Remember that? They'd bring the platter of steaks right to your table.
It was the greatest. We used to go there almost every night. My wife and I, we were talking about it the other day, like where in the hell the time is gone, and I spent 3.5 unbelievable years in Toronto, and both my oldest boys were born there, and at Scarborough Centenary, and we would go to LeBaron. I mean, you know, I probably played, I'm guessing, like maybe 135 or 40 games at the Garden as a member of the Leafs, and I'm proud to say I probably put away probably about 125 steaks after game four.
I think Big Liardi's is closed too, but Barbarians is still open.
Is it? Yeah, I've spent a couple of times in there, but LeBaron was
that was a spot.
Little blast for the past for some of the old timers that are listening in. So
those are the best.
Good times.
The best.
Good times.
We got PJ Carlissimo coming up later in the afternoon.
Nice.
PJ literally goes out for dinner 365 days a year. Like he like Christmas, I'm out. New Year's, I'm out. Thanksgiving, I'm out. Like every single night, he goes out for dinner. So he's probably as disappointed as you are, Eddie. He's been in Toronto many times. If I tell him that news in about 45 minutes, because I was not aware of that, I'm sure he'll be very disappointed too. So we'll pass that.
It was an awesome place.
On.
Awesome place. All right, you guys have a great night, and thanks
too,
for having
buddy.
Me. I appreciate it.
You got it. Anytime. There he is, Eddie Olchuk from the NHL on TNT and his book, Beating the Odds in Hockey and in Life. And he's got a plus ticket on the Bucks to close. He's feeling good, man. He's got two bullets to take that one home tonight in Game 7.
We did a playoff game one night. Where were we? Might have been Detroit. So this is a while ago. And it went long. And we were staying at the MGM Grand Hotel. I was tired. We were doing a game a night. And we get back to the hotel like at 12:30, 1 in the morning. And so I was like, want to roll the bones?
Mm-hmm.
I'm in.
He's the best.
He is
man.
The best.
We have him on every year at the Kentucky Derby. We don't even talk hockey. It's the middle of the second round. Maybe third round, and we're just talking about the ponies and who he likes and who we should have our eye on. Try to get him on for the Preakness, the Belmont, Triple Crown. I mean, no one does capping like Eddie. And I believe last time we had him on, because we knew he was going to TNT, I think he's still going to be doing stuff with NBC for the horse racing, I think.
I think so, yeah.
So he's hitting it on both sides. And, I mean, grandfather the year turning down tickets to Game 6 of the NBA Finals tonight. He's got a chance to be there, and he's got a ticket on the go at a pretty decent plus price for Milwaukee. And he knows what's up. He knows what's up, and he knows what's up in terms of the priority. What did we talk about an hour ago for the Leafs? Goaltending. There's so much focus on Hyman.
That was right down Main Street for you, right? That was right down Main Street for you.
I could not agree more. I said the same thing an hour ago. Like, there needs to be more focus in this town on the goaltending position. Like, this idea that Campbell's the guy guaranteed – is a big gamble, and I'm not sure. I don't think the Leafs see it that way, and I don't
disagree.
Think they should.
I disagree. I think they got to work on they got to focus on their defense.
Well, if Kerfoot's going and Dermott's coming back, and you got Sandin, I'm not that concerned about their defense. We'll come back and talk about it. Because I want to get your thoughts on that, and you can explain where you stand on that and how it all is going to play out. PJ Carlissimo will join us in about 45 minutes. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, confirm or deny in about an hour. And PJ Carlissimo on Game 6 of the NBA Finals tonight in about a half an hour. So when you look at the Leafs offseason, Gord, you think it's the defense that is the priority. That's where you're looking at first.
I think it's not just been this offseason. I think the last 3 or 4 years. So here's the theory, and it depends on which management people you talk to, but here's a prevailing theory that goes through NHL management circles. Take the Stanley Cup champions over the last decade or so, okay? Chicago in 2010, their starting goalie was Antti Niemi. 2011, Boston, Tim Thomas. They tried to give him away the year before. 2012, Jonathan Quick had no playoff resume. 2013, Corey Crawford in Chicago. 2014, Quick again. 2015, Crawford got pulled in the first round of the playoffs. He got shelled. Scott Darling saved that series for them. 2016, 2017, Matt Murray in Pittsburgh. 2018, Braden Holtby in Washington. Wasn't the starter when the playoffs started. And then you get into St. Louis in 2019. Well, that's Binnington, Jordan Binnington, who was a backup in the American League that season. He wasn't called up until February. Now you're in 2020 and 2021. That's Vasilevskiy.
Best goalie in the world.
He's the best goalie in the world. So now, go back over that same time. Who are some of the defensemen that have played over those times? Chicago, Duncan Keith. Boston, Chara. L.A., Doughty. Pittsburgh, now Letang was hurt at times, but Chris Letang in Pittsburgh. In Washington, John Carlson, a perennial Norris Trophy candidate. 2019, Petrangelo. And, of course, the last 2 years for Tampa, Victor Hedman. To me, the commonality of great teams is a Norris Trophy caliber defenseman. And I'll take my chances on an average or above average goalie with a great defense as opposed to the other way around, as opposed to a great goalie with an average defense. So I've really felt for a while about the Leafs that they need to address their need on defense. Now, I think they have to look at Morgan Rielly and decide, is he a number one defenseman? he wasn't killing penalties by the end of the year. They took him off the power play for game seven against Montreal. He's a year away from from unrestricted free agency. When the core players are discussed with Toronto, he's not usually mentioned. They talk about the core four. So where does he fit, Brian, is a key question for me. And I do think that the Leafs need to at least investigate the idea of having a true number one defenseman.
Well, I think that would clearly be ideal. Now, how you can go about finding it is where it gets complicated. I think Seth Jones is a number one.
Yeah.
You got to pay the price, and then you got to hope that he's willing to re-sign. You're not going to pay the price to acquire him unless he's willing to re-sign.
No. And that's part of the deal with Chicago. Chicago acquired Caleb Jones. It's one of the bait to try to get him to trade for him and sign him. And I do believe that Columbus will let you talk to Seth Jones about an extension before.
I think that's where he's going to end up, is Chicago.
I'd have to say Chicago. I mean, if you look at look, he lived in Denver for a while, but they've got Makar. He lived in Dallas for a long time. They just signed Heskinen to a long deal.
Lived in Toronto. Popeye played for the Raptors.
That's what I'm saying. Lived in Toronto. So, mm-hmm. I mean, would he? But Chicago, in terms of he wants to stay in the United States, he wants to go to a big market, play for a marquee franchise, Chicago makes the most sense. Now, you know what's funny about this, Brian, is that Dougie Hamilton is a guy who, analytically, is one of the best defensemen in the NHL. You look at his, never mind, look at his underlying numbers.
No, his stats, like his offensive numbers are huge.
But his underlying numbers are great, too. He's right-handed, he's a great big guy. But it's not unanimous on him. It's funny with him. Like,
he's not in the same ilk of the guys you just listed. He's not Keith, he's not Doughty, he's not Hedman.
Except, analytically, he is.
But that's fine. Analytically, he may be close. I don't think if you actually looked at when Duncan Keith won the Norris, when Doughty was doing what he was doing, I'm not sure it's really that close. I'd have to look at the numbers.
Yeah.
But he's not. He's not those players.
Yeah, he's certainly not in terms of if you talk to coaches who have had him, it's not unanimous.
There's a reason he's jumping around the league.
Right.
There's
a reason. So you talk to John Cooper about Victor Hedman, he loves him like a son. You talk to Barry Trotz about John Carlson. You talk to the Penguins about Letang. You know, obviously the Hawks about Keith. I mean, it's Doughty. It's unanimous. I mean, those coaches view him as the most important player in their team. Dougie Hamilton's not like that. It's a strange thing. And I think all that museum stuff is garbage. I don't put any stock in that. I'm talking about on the ice. I think he's a bit like PK Subban in that he probably leaves you wanting more. You know, he leaves you wanting more physicality. And you worry about the big mistake. You're afraid of the big mistake. But, you know, when Canada, you know, we don't know if NHL players are going to the Olympics yet, but when we talk about the Canadian Olympic team, Dougie Hamilton's name isn't a slam dunk to be on it.
No, it's not.
With Weber likely not playing, maybe he moves into that conversation on the right side. But you know what I mean? Like, it's an interesting one with him.
And listen, I don't think the Leafs are going to be in on him unless they move on from Riley. But I think in terms of the conversation we're having here, their team defense was very good last year. Now, was it because it was during a pandemic and only playing Canadian teams and no fans in the stands? Maybe it was. But they were a top five defensive team last year based on the way they played. Their defense, I think, 1-6 was as balanced as they have had in a long time. Since the early 2000s. Do they have the true number one? No, they don't. I'm not holding my breath on them acquiring that true number one. I'm not sure that happens unless they go out there and trade for Seth Jones. Maybe they sign Hamilton and move on and trade Riley a year out. But their defense corps, especially if Kerfoot is going to Seattle, and it kind of feels like that's where it's going, you're bringing back your top four, plus Dermott, plus Sandin. Bogosian's likely going to walk. I think they're going to acquire a veteran defenseman that can play that right side, hopefully with a little bit of bite, basically a Bogosian type on the cheap. That's a decent 1-7. That's a pretty good 1-7. Does it fit the bill of what you're talking about? No, it doesn't, but it's good enough, I think, to give yourself a crack. The goaltending, you know, even though you ran over all those goalies, they still, outside of the Binnington-St. Louis scenario, which was completely unique.
So was Matt. I mean, Matt Murray in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but it was Marc-Andre Fleury was the other guy, Gord. So, yes, Murray showed up and eventually did it. but not
hurt.
During the regular season. He still was playing enough. And you know, Holtby and Grubauer and that flipping and flopping. Holtby had been a guy who had won before, was up for Vezina's before. Like, you got to have quality goaltending during the regular season. I don't know who's going to start for you come the playoffs.
You do, but
it's got to be good enough.
I think that number one defenseman's a higher priority. For me, I mean, I just – now maybe that's old school thinking. Maybe I'm – you know, maybe it's things –
No, I think ideally you get both, but if you can't, and I don't think they can, like, they have Jack Campbell and nothing else right now.
Yeah.
Like, Joseph Woll, Ian Scott, the kids that they're trying to groom, I have not had anyone tell me within the game, nobody – that one of them is on the brink of being an option. Because if they were, we would know it by now. And that's on the Leafs. The Leafs have had 5 years to figure out the plan for Freddie Anderson walking, and they have not done it internally. Like, that would ideally, you drafted some kid who's 22 who's ready to play. They don't have him. As of now, they don't have him. That's on them, so they got to rectify that issue by going out and acquiring someone via free agency or via trade. Hopefully via free agency, because they got to stop trading assets. They got to stop just saying, they have prospect and picks, draft schmaft. They haven't won anything, and they don't have any draft picks coming up. So they've got to get over that. But I think Jack Campbell on his own, I have no idea what he's going to be this upcoming season. He had a remarkable year last year.
Yep.
Deserved all the flowers he got, all the attention he got. I was the first one to pump his tires. The records he was setting was awesome. He deserved to start every game in the playoffs, and he played well in the playoffs.
Yeah.
If you can extrapolate that over the course of 55 starts in the playoffs, perfect. But I don't think
He's never started 30.
He's never done it. He's never done it. He's had a lot of injury problems. You know, he's always been a backup. So you have to have someone who is reasonable. I'm not saying a superstar. Like, we had Eddie Olczyk on this hour who was throwing out John Gibson. Gibson is not a superstar, but he's a huge talent.
He's
a huge talent.
His only problem in Anaheim is he can't score goals.
Yeah, and he plays behind Anaheim.
He's
been awful.
He's a star goaltender. I mean,
that would fit. You bring him in, Campbell's starting 20 games, right? Like, Campbell's your backup. There's no battle.
So I'm not arguing against.
But I'm not expecting that.
I'm not arguing against goaltending. I'm saying, if you're looking to win the cup, if you want to win the Stanley Cup, I think you need that 25 to 30 minute defenseman who plays on the power play, kills penalties, and plays against the other team's best players. And I'll drop the name here, but you know, we talk to Scotty Bowman all the time, and you can ask Scotty who the best players he ever coached were, and he'll talk about Gilbert Perreault and everything else, but he'll tell you the most important players I ever coached were Serge Savard, Nick Lidstrom,
Larry Robinson.
Those, because when Serge, as he said about Serge Savard, when he was on the ice, the game was under control. When Nick Lidstrom was on the ice, the game's under control. Now, those are Hall of Fame defensemen who are some of the best players ever to play the game. I get that. But the fact is, when Victor Hedman's on the ice, the game is under control for the most part for Tampa.
It is. When Vasilevsky's on the ice, it's pretty under control as well. I mean, you feel pretty good that he's your goalie. But I understand what you're saying. I think we're both in agreement in terms of the importance of both. It's just, I don't think the defenseman pursuit is necessarily achievable.
Well, that's
right
the problem.
Now.
That's the problem.
I'm willing to accept what they have.
You may not be able to, and you can't just kind of throw a flyer and try to get a guy who might be one. You've got to, you know, if you're going to give up assets and do those things. Now, the best place to get one of those guys is in the draft.
Of course,
that's where you get those guys, and that's very hard to do.
And they have not drafted and developed a star defenseman probably since Cabrelet. I guess Riley. Riley and Cabrelet over the last 25 years.
He's a really good player, but he doesn't kill penalties, or he hasn't.
Yeah, he's not an all-encompassing number one.
I do think that guy who goes over the boards and just, you know, aside from the goaltender, your number one defenseman plays more minutes than anyone else on your team.
Yeah, of course.
And so I do think that's a key element. And I think that's, to be honest, I think it's why Edmonton struggles. You know, they haven't had that guy. Darnell Nurse may be that. I think it's why a number of teams struggle. And also it's why some teams overachieve when they can, you know, maybe make up for some holes in other parts of their lineup when they have that guy.
Well, and once you have it, you very rarely give it up. And that is the conundrum that the Leafs have among other teams who are seeking those guys out. And You know, that's the reality of where the Leafs are at. Like, lots of different management, lots of different executives, ownership. I'm thinking this off the fly, and I might be missing somebody. But, again, I think in terms of, like, a star, you know, borderline star, borderline number one top-pairing defenseman, drafted, developed, came up, stayed, and played for a number of years, Morgan Rielly and Cabrera. Like, those are the two guys.
Boreas Salming wasn't drafted, right?
So, right. I'm talking the last 25 years. Last 25 years. And in terms of a goaltender, there isn't one. You know, Tuukka Rask, they drafted, flipped him immediately.
Yeah.
Reimer, they drafted, developed, and it was a good goalie, never a star.
But they, you know, they traded for, they signed Curtis Joseph as a free agent.
Yeah.
Eddie Belfour signed. You know, Freddie was acquired for a trade.
So goalies and defensemen for the last 25 years, not there through the draft and development of the Leafs. Forwards, I can give you three that are on the team right now.
Yeah, a long list. Yeah. I guess short term, yeah, in the short term, they've got to get someone to back up Jack Campbell.
Maybe surpass him, though. That's the point.
Well, but Brian, it's a zero-sum game here. I mean, there's only so much money.
Right, but Campbell comes back to reality a little bit, the money, even if you're giving a guy $3.5 million, and he just reverts back to the mean to an extent where he's not running off the numbers that he ran off this year, which were off the charts quality, then, you know, maybe it's Peter Mrazek. And so, maybe by the end of the year, Mrazek's your starter.
Right. So, but if you're going to spend, what's Mrazek going to cost?
I don't know, $3.5 million?
So you're going to have then probably, off the top of my head, you're going to have, what, eight guys making under $1 million on your team then?
Well, if Hyman walks, if Freddie walks, if Kerfoot gets plucked, there's more money here than I think people are giving them credit for. There is some money. It's not a ton of money, but there is some money. But yes, they're going to have to fill out the outside of the roster, depth defensemen, depth forwards with $1 million contracts or under. Absolutely. Has to happen.
Which is why Spezza was such
a
huge plus for them
at 750. Simmons at 950. Well, Those are two guys that are going to play.
But Spezza's production at 750 was really something.
Yes.
I mean, that is such, I mean, when you talk about points per dollar, you know, points per dollar paid, I mean, Jason Spezza is as valuable a player as there was in the league. I mean, just in terms of that.
Absolutely. And you, the Leafs are banking on that continuing at 38 years old. Yeah. And
Nathan MacKinnon, by the way, is the leader in that category.
I would say, yeah, what is he, 6.3 or 5-something?
Yeah.
So decent deal.
I'll be interested to see what happens between now and the draft. Between now and Friday, we're going to learn a lot about the Leafs.
I
think we're, because the trade freeze comes off, the signing freeze comes off. You know, Zach Hyman's been given permission to talk to other teams. We'll see what the market's like for him. I think it was smart by the Leafs to let him talk to other teams, because now he can bring that deal back to Toronto, and they can see if they can do an 8-year deal or something that can, you know, that can make it work.
We'll catch up with PJ Carlissimo in about 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Game 6 of the NBA Finals tonight. Get his take on that. Confirm or deny still to come as well. Gordon Miller's in studio. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca. All right, PJ Carlissimo, confirm or deny still to come. We just heard the promo for the Olympic coverage.
Yeah. There'll
be a lot of that here on TSN Radio. We got soccer kicking off. Like, it's go time. As of tomorrow morning, the Olympics are going. And Rory McIlroy will be over there, if you can believe it. And he's not that excited.
No.
Let's play the clip from a couple of days ago as he was leaving the Open Championship. He was asked about representing his home country at the Olympic Games. And here's what Rory McIlroy had to say about that.
I'm not a very patriotic guy. I'm doing it because I think it's the right thing to do. And I think, you know, I missed it last time. And, you know, for golf to be an Olympic sport, you need your best players there, and I feel like I want to represent the game of golf more than anything else.
So, what do you make of that? He's not going there to represent his home country. It's golf he's representing.
You know what, Brian? The Olympics, for me, are for Olympians. They are for people who have trained for, and who, for them, the Olympics are the ultimate achievement. And this is no disrespect to the players that have won gold medals in hockey at the Olympics, men's hockey, but it means more to the women than it does to the men. But the guys like it. Don't get me wrong. But no one's going to describe Sidney Crosby when he retires as a two-time Olympic champion. it'll be three-time Stanley Cup champion or whatever it is at the time, Sidney Crosby. So for Rory McIlroy, winning the Olympic gold medal, I guess, would be nice, but that's not going to define his career. Novak Djokovic winning Olympic gold medal in Tokyo is not going to define his career. It's going to be 20-plus majors. For NHL players, it's not the pinnacle. For professional golfers and tennis players, it's not the pinnacle. It's just a fact.
No, it's not. I would say that I think Canadian boys dream of playing for Canada.
Of course they do.
They dream of winning the cup, maybe a little bit more.
But if they don't win the Olympic gold medal, they come home and they're playing in the NHL 2 days later.
They are, but they're also taking the heat from the country. There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot more pressure throughout the country representing the country than representing the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Name the players. Name the players in 06. Name the Canadian players in 06.
Well, I could run them off. Of course I could run them off. But
no one's blaming them. I mean,
no, it's not about blame. But if Crosby goes back to Cole Harbour and they lose to the Americans in 2010, he's going to hear about that. If Pittsburgh loses, no one in Cole Harbour is going to be like, yeah, I watched every game of Pittsburgh. I watched every game of Canada. I think the hockey players, because of the importance of the sport in this country, it does matter a lot to them.
It matters a lot.
Golf doesn't, tennis doesn't.
I'm not saying it doesn't matter a lot to them, but it's not as much as pursuing the cup, I'll grant you that. No Canadian or American NHL player would view their resume as being incomplete if they didn't have an Olympic gold medal. A lot of European, like, so for example, Henrik Lundqvist didn't want to get traded out of New York, and people said, why wouldn't you chase the cup? Like, Henrik Lundqvist has won his ultimate prize. He won the Olympic gold in
2006. Won the gold for Sweden. And Mats might say the same thing.
That's the pinnacle for him.
Okay, we'll come back and get more into this. Carlissimo will join us. PJ Carlissimo, confirmed with Denial Still to Come. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.